Welcome to a special edition of a Spectator podcast. The UK government has a target to hit net zero carbon emissions by 2050, one of the most ambitious targets of any major economy. And so far, at least, the government does seem to be quite serious about it. But does this mean effectively getting rid of or debilitating heavy industry, or is there a third way? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Nadeem Zahawi, the Business Minister, by Gareth Stace, the head of UK Steel, and by Magnus Hall, Chief Exec of Vattenfall, the Swedish energy group, which is kindly sponsoring this podcast. Now, Nadeem, you're Business Minister. A 2050 net zero target surely is fundamentally anti-business, because this is creating nothing but extra costs on business, which will mean extra prices for consumers to hit a target which hardly anybody else in the G20 is committed to hit.
Fraser, thank you very much. I would say that I would fundamentally disagree. I've been business and industry minister now since the summer. And I actually think from the evidence that I've seen, both in terms of historic, so if you look back between 1990 and 2017, the UK reduced emissions by 40% while still growing the economy by more than two thirds. I think some analysts have said it's the best performance in the G7 on a sort of per person, per capita basis. And I think that actually, not only is this good for the environment, it's actually good business, because if we become world leaders, which we're beginning to be recognized as the business and industry minister, I was invited to China, to the World Manufacturing Convention, as the UK was country of honor. And actually, many of the meetings I had there were meetings where people were asking us about how we're going to get to the route to net zero by 2050. Now, this is not about us going for closures of businesses. It's about actually working with business to hit that tough climate change target. So we want our existing industries to remain here and new ones to set up here. And actually, it's about adaptation, as I say, not closure. So the current focus will combine the sort of deployment of energy efficiency technology to reduce bills and save carbon, whilst of also, at the same time, preparing the ground for wider deployment of the necessary decarbonisation technologies, which I hope we will talk about, carbon capture and storage, obviously starting in the mid-2020s.
Okay, well, one of the, of course, industries most heavily hit is steel. Now, Gareth Stace, you're head of UK Steel, and your members have got a bit of a problem, haven't they? Because the various green agendas that the governments have assumed over the years mean that British steel companies are paying £50 per megawatt hour for the electricity, whereas the Germans are paying £30 per megawatt hour. We're at a pretty big competitive disadvantage, and when you look at who's producing the most steel at the moment, China is roaring away. In the last 20 years, the amount of steel is produced has surged. So do you see your industry as being a casualty of this 2050 agenda?
Well, I think we could easily become a casualty or a more significant casualty than we have already. You know, if you think of the steel sector globally, it is a global sector. The price is set globally. And therefore, if a ton of steel in the UK costs, you know, $5, $15 a ton more than our competitors, we lose out. They literally lose out that deal, even at those small margins. And so in the steel sector, we used to produce, you know, like over 20 million tons of steel a year. Now we only produce 7 million tons of steel a year. And as you said, Fraser, China produce, well, actually now over 800 million tonnes of steel a year.
So that's a vast multiple of what Britain is creating, and yet only 20 years ago it was pretty much the same amount of output. So the Chinese picture has transformed. Do you see that the twin aims of steelmaking and environmentalism are fundamentally opposed here?
Well, they are fundamentally opposed if you look at it as straight emissions in the UK and how we can reduce those without actually looking at the wider, what we call consumption emissions in the UK, i.e. out of everything we buy in from China and all those imports, if you count the carbon there as well as the carbon we emit in the UK, actually we're not really doing as well as we think we are. And so, for example, in the steel sector, we used to, in 1970, we used to produce something like 30 million tonnes of CO2 from the steel sector. Now we produce 12 million tonnes of CO2 from the steel sector. But actually, if you look at steel in terms of what we produce and imports, that level of CO2 hasn't gone down much. So we need to remember, we're talking about climate change here, and we're talking about carbon, and carbon is a global gas. Climate change is a global problem and requires a global solution. So if we produce 1 ton less of carbon in the UK as a result of producing less steel, that is going to be, as you said, Fraser, that's then going to be produced in China. Mm. So actually, globally, we're doing nothing to tackle climate change. And what we really need to do is understand that, recognise that, and stop sticking our fingers in our ears and pretending that if we reduce emissions from steel in the UK, that's going to help the global problem. It just is not, because the global demand for steel continues to rise.
Nadeem Zahawi was talking about the great progress Britain's made in lowering its greenhouse gas emissions per capita. I think by some levels, we're now down to levels not seen since 1850, so that's quite striking. But a lot of the work there has been done by technology. For example, cars now weigh pretty much the same as they did 40 years ago, but they're 80% more fuel efficient. So Magnus Hall, can I bring you in now? What can technology do when it comes to heavy industry? Will there be a new way of making steel that wouldn't require the sort of carbon emissions that it does now?
I clearly think there are opportunities there. But if I can back just for a minute and talk a little bit about how I see climate change and what that will actually do to us and our business for the future, I'm quite convinced that we will see this traveling up the ladder of the agenda of importance, not only in Europe, which it has done, but also in other parts of the world as one of the key issues that we need to solve. We can see that now with a lot of, if we take Greta Thunberg, for instance, I think this is now spreading the gospel. And we will see people demanding much more change if we don't see companies actually responding to that. I think because, as you said, I mean, truly, there is a global competition and a global production, but you will also see consumers in the more modern states and more countries to change, and they will demand different things. They will demand products that are really carbon neutral after a while. We will start, for instance, with electrical cars, but then if you have an electrical car, what about the steel in that car? Yeah. So there will be, in my view, a lot more pressure put on that. And if we as companies, as steelmakers or energy producers, don't react to that, we're going to find ourselves that somebody does, and we're going to see ourselves in deep trouble.
So you can see a situation where right now people will buy an electric car and will look at the emissions of that car. But you're thinking maybe in 10 years' time, they're going to be thinking, what was the carbon footprint of this car when it was produced?
Absolutely.
And they might be more inclined to buy a car made from cleaner steel, as it were, rather than dirtier steel.
I think we will see much more of that. And I think you will see companies responding to that in the terms of their own business models. And when they start doing that, that will become a problem for the ones who don't. Mm. Of course, there might be a cost issue to start with. And I will come back a little bit to what I think we are doing right now as our company. But there will be this pressure through the system that if you don't deliver on that, if you take an airline, for instance, one airline says, I'm not going to change to biofuels, for instance, I'm going to live with this fossil fuel forever, I think that airline is going to be gone in 10, 15 years. That will be the same type of pressure that we will see in industry as well. If you believe in that, which I do, then we have to look at new technologies. And we are doing that now in Sweden. We are looking at the process where you can actually take then hydrogen and replace a big part of the coal that you use with hydrogen. So it's used for taking out oxygen in the process, and the combination of coal and oxygen is CO2. The combination of hydrogen and oxygen is water. And that's what we are now spending roughly £120 million on in Sweden on a pilot plant together with a Swedish steel company. It's called SSAB, and a Swedish mining company, I think probably the biggest European mining company, LKAB for iron ore, where we're doing this. And we know in the pre-phase of this that the process is there. Now we're going to verify it, and then the next stage is all ready to have a demonstration plant in 2025. Now, I'm not a steel maker, so I cannot really speak for the connection to the customers on the steel side, but when our partner SSAB talks to the big truck manufacturers who are now going to electrify, they really want to have this next section ready because they say that our customers will ask us for that. Mm. Now, perhaps you will have a big part of the world where you still have the ordinary steel, but there will be a growing market and a growing demand for this other steel. And to me, that's the change that will actually drive much, much more of the environmental changes we need to tackle than any sort of, you need some policy making in between, but you also will see consumers demanding much, much more and companies responding in their business.
Now, Nadeem Zahawi, right now the government's target has been criticised a bit of a con because it's about basically the carbon emissions of Britain as a country. It doesn't really factor in all of these cars that we're importing. And there is an argument that pretty soon we should adopt a new measurement, a new target that looks at the amount of carbon emissions caused by those who import as well as those who consume. Now, if that's the case, might we be looking at a situation where the government has not made the adjustments it needs to make in the domestic steelmaking industry? Because if it turns out that heavy industry returns to growth, if we can sell ourselves on a cleanliness that other countries can't, shouldn't that be something that Britain should be preparing for right now?
I think, Fraser, you're right to challenge us on this. But what I would say is this is an enormous challenge to get to net zero by 2050 in decarbonisation of our industrial production sectors. And if you attempt to try and hug the world, then you do nothing well, which is why I agree with what Magnus is saying, which is actually the really good businesses are the ones knocking on our door already saying, look, we want to work with you. UK Steel and what Gareth was talking about is absolutely right. You know, we've got to work together to make sure that UK high energy users actually can continue that journey to get to transformation of their business. We've got the Industrial Energy Transformation Fund, which Gareth and I have talked about. It's £315 million, where we want to help those businesses with high energy use to cut their bills and obviously transition to low carbon. We've got a number of other funds, the Clean Steel Fund, which we're just designing at the moment. We've just had a call for evidence. It's about £250 million of funding to look at how we again support the UK steel sector to move to a sort of decarbonisation pathway. But Gareth is right, you know, industrial energy prices. On gas, by the way, Fraser, UK gas prices for large industrial users were the second lowest in the EU 15 and 2018 last year. But on electricity, we were the highest of the EU 15 in 2018 for all sizes of energy users. So we're working with UK Steel and the sector.
And why is that, Nadeem? Why is there such a difference between electricity and gas?
There are three main drivers to relatively high wholesale electricity prices in the UK. One is the sort of the difference in the generation mix and diverging price for different generation fuels. Then there's the carbon price support in Great Britain. And then the sort of currently limited interconnection to the European continent, so that would prevent convergence. Now, we provide substantial support in the form of exemptions and compensation for eligible businesses, including steel companies. And that has helped, I think it's something like 900 million since 2013. And we've cut bills for them by about 80%. But UK Steel is right to say, even with that help, there's still a gap at the moment. And I spoke to the All Party Group this week as well on steel, to discuss, what can we do to make sure, as Gareth says, this is a global industry. We have taken the strategic decision in the UK that we want to be a steel producer and continue to do well in the future in steel production. And so we need to look at this very, very seriously.
Yeah, so looking from the steel sector point of view in the UK, and I think it's easy to go on and on about international competitiveness and kind of actually stick our head in the sands, but it's not something we want to do. What we really want to do as a steel sector in the UK is seize a massive opportunity going forward, both in what Magnus is talking about in terms of the low carbon future, but also in terms of the global demand for steel, as I said before, is increasing, and therefore let's get a slice of that cake. So I'm very excited to be working now with Minister Zahawi, because what we do need to do is recognise that we need competitive electricity prices, which will hopefully be part of delivering a competitive business landscape.
And the government could give those to you tomorrow, couldn't it? Because about a third of the electricity price is simply the result of government policy.
Absolutely. And and that's the government policy, and even transmission charges are controlled by Ofgem, which is government to all intents and purposes. So if we had that competitive business landscape, we could compete on that global scale, which we're finding difficult to now. We would then be able to invest in the sector, modernise the sector. And then what I'm really keen to do is set out a massive ambition for 2025, 2030, 2040, where we as the steel sector in the UK work with government to say, right, by whatever date we choose, we are going to be carbon neutral. You know, we're going to be zero, net zero carbon. And we can do that. I mean, I think if you look at, say, Liberty Steel, they're going to be carbon zero by 2030. Celsa Steel, the whole group is going to be carbon zero by 2025. Tata Steel are doing some really incredible research projects. And we need to seize that opportunity and seize that challenge. Mm. But we can only do that. We can't do that on our own. We can only do that by working with government and in partnership, but being competitive right the way through. And at the moment, we're not competitive, we cannot invest, and we're losing out year by year. Our production is getting lower and lower and lower, and that is not the solution to global climate change.
Magnus, Vattenfall has got businesses, of course, in Sweden, but in other countries as well. Who do you think is doing it best right now when it comes to coming up with... And there's the other question, of course, of who pays for this, because if a taxpayer is forking out huge amounts of money for this, that is not ideal. You pointed to a scenario where consumers might, in the future, be willing to pay more, in which case you get a sort of revolution which is happening to the internal combustion engine right now. I mean, Volvo in Sweden has said it's going to phase them out. And so we're seeing an unexpectedly quick change. But how can you see the burden of costs falling as the steel industry tries to move towards net zero?
I think it's a timing issue. I think over time, I think you create a new system, which is with its own cost. And in that new system, you will also create cost reductions, because that will always happen in all new systems that you will actually come into. So I think the level of cost, yes, and you have to be prepared to pay. I think the state has to be there to help you. Mainly, if you ask me for a country that does it right now, I think we have in our own home country, Sweden, because we have a decarbonized electricity system to start with. So, of course, we have some prerequisites, which are good. But then we have the state also financing half of, or a third of this pilot plant, for instance. So we need money. But I'd like to come back to this issue that I think is really important, that you have to make sure that you keep your industry in the meantime. If you're going to have a development step that you're going to take to the next level, you really need to make sure that you also keep your own industry. And I think you, Garrett, we're talking about that. And that's exactly the discussion we're having in Sweden. So you throw out the whole industry and don't have the next solution coming up. And to me, it's a little bit a question, what solution are you going to look at? We are a keen promoter of electrification as one of the solutions that we see for climate change. And you will see now also electricity being produced cheaper and cheaper going forward. And if you, for instance, are then a steel producer and you hook up with a supplier of renewable electricity for the future, I think you might be getting quite good deals for electricity. And if you marry that then also with hydrogen solutions, your competitive power is not going to be that bad if you compare it to your other solution, which is CCS. And I'm sure you're very much into the CCS solutions.
Carbon capture and storage.
Carbon capture and storage. That's not for free. Mm. That's quite an expensive technology, and I think we don't have that in a full scale yet to know exactly where that will go.
Well, we don't know if it will work or whether it will be commercial.
No, exactly. And we don't know how people will react when you start pumping down CO2 in the ground, whether they will say, no, not in my backyard, because Vattenfall has experience from doing that. We were the first ones almost to build. We had coal power production in Germany. And we said to become green, we are going to invest in carbon capture and storage. This is 10 years back now. We invested quite a lot of money and we were all ready to pump it down. It was too expensive, so it was still a trial. But the local community said, no, you cannot pump it down. So there, I think it's also important to see that CCS is not just, you know, the simple solution. It's expensive. We don't really know how it will be approached when you come to permissions and things. So I think you really need also to look at the other part of it, where we are engaging ourselves, which is hydrogen.
Nadeem, what are the British prospects for carbon capture and storage? Is this going to be something else which is going to absorb vast amounts of taxpayers' money for not necessarily a guaranteed result?
Well, I think there are some really good learnings on carbon capture and storage from Norway. The Norwegians have done some really interesting work in this area. I think, look, we have to make it a part of the what we've all been discussing, which is the sort of the transformation of our industrial regions. I think there's good potential in, say, the steel clusters, where the government can lean into developing the infrastructure to be able to sort of pull the carbon and, of course, then store it. So I think there is potential for this. In the summer of this year, we launched a consultation on the sort of potential business models for carbon capture usage and storage. And I think what we want to do is make sure that we understand fully where the success is my view. How do we then learn from that? So the Norwegians say they need much bigger scale. The UK economy does offer that scale. The International Energy Agency estimates that there will be a global carbon capture usage and storage market worth over £100 billion. So it would be, I think, wrong for us just to simply dismiss it. But I also think, to Magnus's point, you know, hydrogen is a really exciting area for us to work in, especially when you look at, for example, at Cummins, the US business, which has a very big footprint in the UK, where they've bought a hydrogen engine business and are ready for deployment of hydrogen trains. We need to sort of really do more to look at how we use hydrogen. And of course, look at how we can produce low carbon hydrogen. We've launched a £100 million fund alongside the Clean Steel Fund that I spoke to you about earlier, where we want to look at how we can deploy low carbon hydrogen production capacity.
But is this really the government's job, Nadim? I mean, if these technologies stand to be profitable, if there's going to be a consumer demand for them, then ought we just let businesses put the investment themselves? Why should the government try to play Cupid or business incubator?
Well, I think just listening to Magnus there and the sort of the Swedish experience, it has to be a co-production in my view. Government has to, you know, essentially demonstrate a willingness and a focus to be able to send the message to business that, look, this country wants to do this. We're serious about it. Come and talk to us. Come and invest here and we will co-invest with you, because then you begin to unlock some of this stuff. Now, you know, hydrogen is much more real. There are sort of hydrogen trains running in Europe. Now, we can do the same thing, I think, here in the UK. So I think there's real potential here for us to not just invest in, as you quite often challenge us, Fraser, waste taxpayers' money, which I hate doing, but actually invest in the future, which will make us the leading country in the world for all these new technologies that are emerging. But I don't want to do it sort of almost by, you know, wearing rose-tinted sunglasses, thinking the world is amazing if I just keep chucking hundreds of millions at it. No, I want to learn from what's happened elsewhere. So if you remember, Fraser, I think it was George Osborne who launched a £1 billion carbon capture and storage fund, which actually didn't really work at the time. And I think David Cameron at the time, you know, said, look, I'm a little bit skeptical about this. But since then, there are countries that have been able to deploy carbon capture usage and storage, and we've got to learn from them and use that learning to be able to sort of do even better here in the UK.
Magnus?
Yeah, I just wanted to go exactly along those lines. And our experience from Sweden is that the state puts roughly 25% to 30%, but they don't do it unless there is a clear commitment from industry and a majority committee from industry.
A majority,
to do this.
Right.
Yes.
But the state also owns Vattenfall as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, so. But that doesn't have anything to these others. There is another private company. It doesn't at all matter whether we are a state-owned company or not. And that should be honest. I mean, we are run as any other private company. We don't particularly represent the state. Mm. But I think that's a necessary thing. And, if we have new technology and we are not prepared to, because they need some initial help. Typically, if you take just what's happening in the UK and you look at the offshore wind in UK, where the state has put a lot of money in, but with the auctioning system has really meant also that the costs have really come down. And now, after a while, you will see that the state is more stabilizing the money rather than paying anything after a while.
Yeah, we've seen some staggering reductions. I think, Nadim, you and I met a few weeks ago, and you're pointing out to me there had been an auction where the price per megawatt hour was £40 in offshore wind, and it used to be £150 not so long ago. So something is happening fairly quickly in a way that nobody would have predicted even 5 years ago.
Absolutely. And Magnus's company is very much part of the family of businesses that have helped us get there. I mean, it's been a remarkable success story for the UK offshore wind production. I think we're up to 36-37% of sort of global offshore wind capacity by, you know, effectively, if you look back, Fraser, it's been 15 years when actually we started to sort of take the decision to lean into this. And now to get to a place where only 4 years ago, as you say, it was about £140 per megawatt hour was the then auction and the price. The auction we've just had very recently is down at £39 per megawatt hour. An enormous success. And again, that will play a major part in our electricity production in terms of where we actually focus and where we invest even more.
But it's fairly easy for the electricity sector or the energy sector to decarbonize. It's not a global sector. Electrons don't really travel across borders that much. And therefore, the consumer has paid for the decarbonization of the electricity grid. And I think that's what's difficult about hard to tackle sectors like steel and cement and others, because as I said before, they're global sectors. But the key thing here is that we must not cede our control of our emissions and our steel production to China, for example. If we really want to seize control of our emissions, we have to make that steel here. But what I think it needs is not a tweak in here and a tweak in there, is a root and branch change from a government, and I personally see this government as a government that could be or is a can-do government, that needs a root and branch change of looking at an industrial strategy that has a clear sense of the vision it's aiming for, and making sure that it gives the investors in, say, for example, the steel sector, a clear reason why they'd invest in the UK. Now, you've got to remember, most of the steel producing companies in the UK are globally owned, and they can invest their money anywhere. And they all, unfortunately, at the moment, tell us, why would they invest in the UK? With Brexit uncertainty, with high electricity prices, they'll put their money elsewhere, and that's going to damage us. So why doesn't this can-do government make sure that investments just flow to the UK? Because why wouldn't they? Because it is the place to invest. It is the place to make sure that you reduce your carbon emissions, that the best projects are there, like Magnus's project in Sweden. It's a fantastic project. It's a pilot project at the moment. They're aiming for 2030. You know, so it's that lovely long-term vision, which we don't have, we haven't had in the UK at all. And all they've done in the last 18 years since I've been in this business is just bang us over the head. And every year we reduce the amount of steel that we produce in the UK. And at some point, we won't produce that steel in the UK. We'll import it all and be at the behest of China.
Magnus, isn't the thing about hydrogen fueled steel that it's, right at the moment, it's pretty expensive, by some estimates, between 60 and 90% more than steel made by traditional methods. So the whole investment in the hydrogen project will be a bet that these costs will somehow come down, because you can see why a consumer might spend, I don't know, a third more on a clean steel car, but they wouldn't spend twice as much. So I imagine if this is going to take off, the costs of clean steel would really have to come down quite a lot.
But they will also, and I don't know where you got your 60 to 90% from, but we're looking at...
That was the Belgian plants with AkzoNobel.
Yeah, okay, but we are looking at perhaps 35 to start with. Mm. And then of course, we need to get our cost reductions down for sure. But of course, it remains to be seen whether consumers will actually ask for this. Our customers to the steel industry, when we discuss this hydrogen issue, that they are saying, but if that really comes true, of course, we don't know. But I believe you will see a great pressure on this change. So if you take the European market, and if you take then, of course, the fact that if you can start importing all the steel to Europe for car making, of course, then you have to discuss some sort of a border adjustment tax or something like that, because otherwise we won't get the grip of the CO2 emissions that we have in our country. I think sooner or later that will be, and I think in this new Green Deal that's actually being discussed. So I think that's necessary. But I don't, you know, if you take just a car, that's not going to be double expensive. The cost of the steel, the basic steel in a car, it's like 3-4%, you know, it's not very much at all. So from that aspect, you will will not see that significant. Of course, for you or for the steel, for the buyer of the steel cost is important. But if you have a 10 or 15% higher steel cost, that's not going to kill your calculation for buying that car. If your customers really say, that's what I want, and I'm prepared to pay a little extra for that. Over time, I don't think the other one will exist. You know, I think we're in change here for a world which is going to be completely climate neutral, and where fossil fuels, of course, they will perhaps remain for some time, but we didn't leave Stone Age because of stone sort of running out of stones. I think we see a real change. That's my expectation. And the climate issue, if we believe it's true, which I do, that we're really facing a real issue here, that's not only Europe, that's US, that's China, that's South America, it's everywhere. I think this we will see much more policies and then companies adapting and driving this change. But we need to have a policy together with the governments that sort of recognizes this, makes a long... I love this vision view that you have a 2035 or 2040 vision of your industry. That's where we're going to be. How are we going to get ourselves there? What help do we need from governments? What can we do ourselves? What are the possible pathways? That's the discussion we really need to take.
Magnus Hall, Nadeem Zahawi and Gareth Stace, thank you very much indeed.